A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, live from Wimbledon on day six of Wimbledon in our dry weather position. I'd love to say never in doubt, but again, very much in doubt until very, very recently. But we've taken the risk. The skies have cleared above us. All is going to be fine. We're overlooking Court 18 again. The court is covered. Wimbledon is asleep for the night, and that is when our work begins. David's just hot-footed it from court number one, where he's watched the very much back Matteo Berrettini.
And then some.
And Matt and I have been watching Elena Rybakina be very much back if she was ever away on centre court. 6-1, 6-1 for her just now over Katie Bolter.
Yes, I think that's a great matchup for Elena Rybakina, which we sort of thought it might be the other night, but you never really know until you see it. But all of our fears for Katie Bolter were confirmed, I think, as soon as that got going. Rybakina, a bigger game, a better game, especially under the roof. And she was absolutely ruthless tonight.
Yeah, and all of our fears about Elena Rybakina before the tournament completely and utterly dispelled. Can we go back into our archives and delete the Rybakina sections of our two preview shows? Because, my goodness me, she's made a mockery of them, hasn't she?
Yeah, and that's the only downside. I mean, I guess it's a downside from a British tennis point of view because a British player, the sole remaining British tennis player, has lost. But all that aside, and all predictions, humiliation, which frankly I'm accustomed to aside, isn't it just great to see her doing what she's capable of doing again here on this stage? Because a draw with Elena Rybakina in it, healthy, playing her best tennis, that still has Aryna Sabalenka and Iga Świątek and Ons Jabeur in it, is a good situation, and she's just getting better.
On the BBC coverage, they flashed up a stat midway through that first set about the respective forehand speeds of Elena Rybakina and Katie Bolter, and Bolter's a big hitter on the forehand side. That is her main strength. She doesn't often look underpowered, and Elena Rybakina, it's such a subtle type of power, isn't it? I wasn't expecting it to be the vast difference that it was. I think it was over 10 miles per hour, at least 10 miles per hour. Yeah, 72 and 82 miles per hour it was. That's a big deal, that kind of difference. And yeah, it's not the thunder crack of a sound that the Sabalenka ground strokes make, because it's just power that's produced in such a different way, but it is power.
Oh, it really is. And it's actually since watching Rybakina live that I think I've had a greater appreciation for her game, because it's smooth power. It's power that doesn't look like it should be happening.
You're on, Matt.
In around 15 minutes, please make your way to the exit gate and make sure you take all your belongings with you. We hope you've enjoyed your day here at Wimbledon. A pleasant and safe journey home. Thank you. That was much better than what I was going to say about Rybakina, so I'm glad they interrupted.
I don't know where you go from here, Matt. There's still 8 days to go. How can that possibly improve?
Well, I think I can improve the rhythm. I can get it properly in time with the guy.
Maybe you can make some script suggestions.
Yeah, I could improve
make
improve
it
his script.
More of a double act.
Yeah, just It's not very fun, is it? I think we could make it a bit more fun.
Straight man and a comedy man.
Please excuse me, everybody listening on the podcast, because I'm going to do something for those joining us visually tonight, and that is that I'm going to ask Matt Roberts to stand up so that everyone can see this incredible T-shirt that he's wearing.
Can I put my laptop down?
Yeah, but I still think you need to do a little... Is that in shot, Matthew? What he's wearing, for the benefit of people listening, is what I think might be a vintage T-shirt, but Matt thinks it's recently produced. But it's from...
Available on the internet.
Celebrating the Battle of the Sexes, 1973, 50th anniversary coming up this September. And it has a picture of Billie Jean King, circa 1973, and the scoreline in the Battle of the Sexes, which was a straight sets victory for Billie Jean King over Bobby Riggs. Matt, you are a legend. Billie Jean King was a big feature of the day today, wasn't she, in the Royal Box on Centre Court. I don't know if she left her seat all day, but it didn't look like it. She stuck it out through the rain delay. She had a half an hour chat with Leah Williamson, who was one of the lionesses in there today. It was wonderful scenes.
Yes, there was something a little bittersweet about the Lionesses being in there, because they're the ones who are all injured and can't go to the World Cup this month. But seeing Leah Williamson talk to Billie Jean King for such a long time, I mean, honestly, a half an hour, there was lots of hand gestures going on. I need a professional lip reader on that conversation, because the footage of it was cinematic. They had close-ups, they had camera angles.
Can you imagine how many topics they covered in that time, knowing what we do about the mind of Billie Jean King?
I have asked Alana what was said, and she said she will try to find out for us.
Good work, David.
Watch this space, folks. Quite literally, the exclusive on Billie Jean King and Leah Williamson is coming up. She stayed right the way through that rate. That chat with Leah Williamson happened in the rain delay that took place mid-match during Ons Jabeur. Who are you smiling at, David?
Just those lovely people over there. But anyway, carry on.
Hello, lovely people. Midway through Ons Jabeur and Bianca Andreescu, the match that we were all pumped for, that we were all desperately looking forward to today, didn't disappoint, I don't think, didn't quite finish, it didn't quite have the crescendo ending that that the match perhaps deserved, because there was so much good tennis in there and a really good contest, interrupted by the rain at 3-4 in the deciding set. Andreescu, that first set for Andreescu, and I know the problem is that she can't sustain it yet at this stage of her, what are we calling it, a comeback? What is it? I don't know. But that first set from Bianca Andreescu, in the words of David Law, was 2019 US Open stuff.
Yeah, it was so exhilarating, and she was kind of Ons Jabeur in the first set. She kept answering any slice backhand with this whipped inside out forehand slice of her own that you would normally look at and say, that's unnecessary, you don't need to hit that shot. But it was almost as though she just it loosened her up to play the tennis that we know she can play, and she was in charge of that match. And I wonder whether she'll have some regrets, or whether maybe, I don't know, I didn't see enough of the third set to be able to judge. There was a contentious moment, or you could say, in towards the end of the second set. But generally speaking, I think that Andreescu played brilliantly, and then Ons Jabeur responded. And I think that those are two good news stories for tennis.
Yeah, my take, I don't know what you think about this, Matt, is that she shouldn't have regrets about Ons Jabeur making a match of it and winning that second set. I do think Ons Jabeur responded, as you said, David, and raised her level and just got a feel for what Andreescu was doing. It's such a different ball and such a confused... She got a taste, she talked about this in her on-court interview, she got a taste of what it's like to play herself, didn't she? And it takes an awful lot of adjusting to, and Jabeur did that in the second set. I do think she will have potential nightmares about the 4-all game that she played and lost to Love.
Yeah, it was a very loose game.
Third set, was that?
Third set, yeah.
Who knows what I said? Third set.
Very loose, lots of unforced errors, kind of handed it to Ons Jabeur to allow Ons Jabeur to serve it out, which she did. Generally I was really encouraged by this performance from Andreescu. You know, it wasn't wasn't that long ago that we were getting really excited about Bianca Andreescu at the French Open when she had that magnificent match against Azarenka, and then we sent our mate Dave, who'd had a miserable day at Roland Garros, we said, go and cheer yourself up with some Bianca Andreescu over on Simone Mathieu. And she promptly lost, I think it was 1-1 maybe, to Sirenko in about 45 minutes. And there was absolutely no backing up that previous good performance. Whereas here, she did back up, performance-wise, what she put in the other day against Angelina Kalinina. So I was really encouraged by that. And yeah, it did almost feel like Ons Jabeur halfway through this match just went, hang on a minute, I'm the shot maker, I'm the one who does all the fun stuff, you might have your sliced forehands, but I'm the one who's been doing this more recently and at a really top level. And I think she really enjoyed that challenge in the end, Ons Jabeur, and yeah, a really, really good win for Ons Jabeur in the end, because Andreescu was playing pretty well today.
Just going to read you a line from her press conference transcript, which has just come in. We weren't able to go to her press conference because it took place while we were setting up for the live show, which probably is the most tense part of the day for all of us. She was asked about whether she felt the match was on her racket. She said, I don't think I changed anything. I think she kind of started going for it a little bit more. She said she hit a lot of lines today. I don't want to say lucky shots, but she did hit on the parts of the court that had a lot of bad bounces. So I was like, okay, that's fine. But I tried to stay positive, and I mean, that game's going to haunt me. Let me just tell you, it's tough. And even the four-all game to go up 5-4, that one's going to haunt me. But that's tennis. I don't think anyone has ever held their serve all the time. So, yeah, it sucks. It really sucks. I'm very upset.
Oh. Mm.
There's green shoots of growth, Bianca. Keep going.
There is, and
I've said that before. Every Grand Slam.
And David mentioned a contentious moment, which we haven't described. And it was in the second set, wasn't it? Andreescu hit a shot which was called out. She was going to challenge. And there was a bit of a sort of quite a friendly exchange between Ons Jabeur and Bianca Andreescu. And it seemed to be Ons Jabeur sort of saying, look, don't waste your challenge on that, because it was definitely out. And Andreescu accepted that. And then the replay on, you know, showed the Hawkeye and it was actually in. And then Andreescu lost her serve moments after. Now, I don't think Ons Jabeur is that a sort of player.
If she's dastardly, she is covering it up.
She's getting away with it.
Very well.
I watched this happen and my instant reaction was, there's nothing sinister in intention here. I got to be honest, if that was other players and not Ons Jabeur, I might be rethinking that. I might not be saying what I've just said. Because that did change things. That changed the momentum. Andreescu came straight out and lost the serve. You know, if you wanted to, you could accuse her of that. I think that would be unfair, because I think that Ons Jabeur just gave an honest opinion trying to be helpful. That is what I saw.
Also think it diffused the intensity a bit of Bianca Andreescu, because it was a kind of funny light moment. And because it's Ons Jabeur, it just ends up being sort of lovely, doesn't it? And less bent over fist pump, come on, and more sort of, oh, Ons, you're so nice.
We all love you.
But yeah, I think that victory will make Ons Jabeur a lot more dangerous now going forward in the tournament. I think that would be good for her.
Yeah, although she now plays Petra Kvitova.
Oh, great.
Which
I didn't know that.
Feels like, you know, Ons Jabeur could probably play really well and still lose that match. It still feels like Petra Kvitova will be the one dictating the play in that match, you know, as she so often is.
Every match she plays,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, she played Elena Rybakina in Miami and was dictating play. She's ridiculous. She was challenged today against Natalia Stevanovic, Serbian qualifier, making her Wimbledon main draw debut at nearly 29 years of age.
Oh, wow.
She used to just not play grass at all, not bother with coming to play Wimbledon qualies, and then she entered an ITF grass court event in India and won it and fell in love with grass on the spot.
Oh,
and
so
here
great.
She is, having qualified at Wimbledon, made it to the third round, and she was making a play for the intensity list. Let me tell you, she was all kinds of fire out there, and she was drawing Kvitova into a fight, which is my favourite kind of Kvitova to watch. There were some really good podges out there today, but she's playing really well, Kvitova. Not perfect, you know, still handfuls of unforced errors, which you'd think that when she comes up against the best, she'll have to iron out. But I think I favour her in that match against Jabeur, because Kvitova playing really well at Wimbledon generally means Kvitova wins.
What's that facial expression, Matt Roberts?
That was, please don't make me make a prediction about a Petra Kvitova match.
Well, I just made an unsolicited one.
Which, that's on
excellent.
You. The thing is, Petra Kvitova has spoken quite a lot this tournament about the fact that, yes, she's had great results at Wimbledon in the past. You know, she's a two-time champion here. And yes, her grass court results have kept being good in her career. She just won a title a couple of weeks ago. But actually, she hasn't had that many good results at Wimbledon since she won her second title in 2014. I think this is just the second time since then that she's made the second week. And she says she does feel an extra pressure here, you know, because she knows that she should be performing well. And I think we've seen that pressure a little bit so far this tournament. I mean, it was an absolute ordeal trying to serve this match out. I mean, I think she sort of tried to match the intensity that was going on down the other end of the court, and I loved it, but it's not necessarily conducive to Petra Kvitova playing her best tennis. It tends to be a bit more serene and calm when things
That's
are going well for her. But yeah, she was fist bumping, and it was great to watch. Mm. But it did take her four match points to finish it off. But yeah, I mean, she's come through some tests, because Sasnovic, who she beat in the previous round, had beaten her before at Wimbledon. So, you know, it's been a slightly tricky route, and now she finally gets that match against Ons Jabeur, and all I'm going to say is I can't wait.
Matt's dodged it. David, what's happening? What do you think?
I would go for Kvitova. I just feel like she's on a mission, and we don't know, to use the sort of Andy Murray mentality of last night, how many more chances Kvitova is going to have. She's in such great form. She's got a title this year, a big title, and she couldn't be more pumped up. Sometimes Kvitova just looks that little bit, I'll go and have a swing, and that's dangerous too. I said that's interesting when you were talking about her showing intensity and getting drawn into a dogfight, and you, Catherine, you love seeing that Petra Kvitova. I'm not convinced about what you say. I think she is dangerous in those situations. I feel that almost as though that might elevate her, drag something else out of her. And I don't have any evidence for that. I don't,
not today.
I can't think of...
Miami?
Anecdotally, I can't think of... Like, when she's won the title here, she's just sort of destroyed people.
Exactly.
Remember what she did to Eugenie Bouchard in the final, in the last time she won it. But I just think that at this stage in her career, she needs to be so dialed into the moment. And I feel like that whole body language of when she shouts podge and she gets down on her haunches and she hits winners. I mean, the problem is I don't know who I want to win that match. I mean, we try to be objective in terms of who we think will win and our assessment of it. But inevitably, you get a desire for somebody to come out on top, just because it's human nature. I just like them both so much, and either one winning would be a good story. I think it'll be Kvitova.
We can tell people who Hannah wants to win instead of declaring our own preferences, perhaps. Hannah wants Petra Kvitova to win more than she wants anything else in the world, I think. The whole title, I think, rather than just that match against Ons Jabeur. Could happen, Hannah. Definitely could happen. Talked about Rybakina earlier. Shall I tell you who Elena Rybakina now faces in round four? David, you might be ahead of your time, because Elena Rybakina now faces Beatrice Haddad Maia.
Tell you what, she's playing. Huh? What 6-2, 6-2 today?
Yeah, she got it done before the rain, which was really impressive because the rain came quite early.
Yep.
That's the sound of David winning the beer race.
Winning the beer race.
It wasn't even a race today, it was just a victory lap.
I'm on fire today.
I really think that Haddad Maia getting over that hurdle, finally, that she did at Roland Garros, finally getting beyond, I think, the second round of a slam for the first time, has freed her up. And we saw that in the latter end of that tournament at Roland Garros. Her level improved, and she really pushed Iga Świątek there. And here, she had a 1-4 head-to-head deficit against Sarana Cuesta, and yet she now feels like a different player in the slam. She had 23 winners and 11 unforced errors. Really, really good performance. We know she's good on grass, because that's why David predicted her to reach the Wimbledon final last year. She had so many wins on the surface.
I mean, literally,
she just wasn't ready to do it at a slam yet.
Yeah, correct, Matt. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I love to see these players. I'm thinking of Elina Svitolina yesterday, that had big runs in Paris, and you didn't know at the time how much they were going to be one-offs, or not one-offs, but sort of random peaks in a career. I'm loving seeing these people that are doing back-to-back things in Paris and here at Wimbledon. Arina Sabalenka, a winner today, incredibly comfortable over Anna Blinkova. She keeps playing Russians. She's now got Ekaterina Alexandrova, who I keep wanting to write Conqueror of Madison Brengel after I write Ekaterina Alexandrova, even though, you know, who on tour isn't a Conqueror of Madison Brengel at some stage in their lives?
And she has a head-to-head lead against Sabalenka Alexandrova.
Wow.
Don't have too much more to say, but that is something that I know.
I wonder why that is. I don't have anything for you.
On paper, curious. I can't recall any of their previous meetings. On paper, I would say this a bit like Bolter and Rybakina. They're very similar players. And in that situation where you kind of take the matchup thing out of it, it's just the better player that comes out on top. Alexandrova belts the ball. She really goes for it. I think she's a pretty fearless tennis player. I'm sure that will help her playing the second seed, and that'll either be on court one or centre court, quite possibly centre court, because she was court one today, Sabalenka.
When were those previous meetings? Do you have any idea whether they were in the sort of recent champion Sabalenka period?
We are live, David.
Okay. We don't. Because I don't. But I'm sort of... Here's what I think. I think that Sabalenka now wins that match. I think that she is a different player to just the tennis player that goes toe-to-toe with Alexandrova. I think she's champion Sabalenka.
Yeah, I mean, I back Sabalenka in most matches this year. I mean, she's only lost once at the Slam, hasn't she? It took an extraordinary performance from Mukova to beat her. You've brought it up, Catherine.
I've got the head-to-head. You've talked for sufficiently long that I've got the head-to-head up. Their last meeting was June of last year on grass in Herzogenbosch, and that was won by Sabalenka in two straight sets. And actually, Sabalenka won their... No, that wasn't their last one. That was their last one on grass. They also played in October 2022. Sabalenka won that. No, am I reading scores wrong, Matt?
You're reading a very confusing head-to-head, I would say.
David, you've led us down an absolutely terrible road.
Yeah,
sorry.
This would totally be edited out if this was a podcast.
Apologies, everybody.
Apologies to everyone just listening to this as a standard podcast, thinking we don't usually get this drivel. Alexandrova won their last two meetings, including one on grass in Herzogenbosch in June of last year.
Right. Like I said... Not when she was a champion at Sabalenka.
Yeah, crucially, no meetings this year.
Exactly.
And Sabalenka is different this year.
So grass, though, and 7-5-6 love scoreline. But then I suppose Sabalenka knew she wasn't playing Wimbledon last year.
I knew Alexandra wasn't playing Wimbledon. It's not our best work, this, is it?
I'm going Sabalenka. What are you going?
Oh, Sabalenka.
I've got Sabalenka winning the title, so yeah, I'm going Sabalenka. Madison Keys.
God, we've been so exposed.
Madison Keys is continuing her Eastbourne form.
What did she do today?
She beat Marta Kostyuk 6-4, 6-1. And I spoke to someone today who was there in Eastbourne, works at WTA, watching Madison Keys, and she was just in awe of how she was playing. And it does seem like she's just continued on that same track. I put Madison Keys in the Grigor Dimitrov category of she looks world-beating until she's not, until she comes up against someone where mental baggage comes to be a factor where that...
I think that's really fair. If I think back, it was 2014 that I was in Eastbourne commentating on an 18-year-old Madison Keys facing Angelique Kerber before Kerber started winning Grand Slam titles, and they met in the final. Keys won that final, and if you'd have asked me right then, I'd have said we're looking at a multiple Grand Slam title winner in Madison Keys. 2014. That's the year that Grigor Dimitrov beat Andy Murray and got to the semi-finals and faced Novak Djokovic. And I'd have also said you're looking at probably at least a Grand Slam champion, maybe multiple in Dimitrov. I think that's a fair comparison.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think we know how well Madison Keys is playing until... second week, really.
Until she plays somebody really, really top in a high-stakes match.
I'm so scarred by the year 2018, I think it was, when she was playing sublime tennis. And this was less than a year after reaching that US Open final, pretty much peak Madison Keys. And then I commentated on her losing to Evgenia Rodina in the fourth round. And she was terrible. And the draw had totally opened up for her. And if I've got mental scar tissue from that defeat, I can only imagine what Madison Keys has got from it. But we'll see. We'll see. She plays Mira Andreeva or Anna Potapova, Anastasia Potapova, in the next round. Theirs was the only match today, the only singles match, which didn't even get on court due to the rain. The rain came for a second time around about 7:30. And they made the decision in the referee's office to cancel all play on the outside courts at about 8 p.m. So Andreeva and Potapova will be inserted into the schedule tomorrow. So that's an advantage for Keys, that she gets a day off and her fourth round opponent doesn't.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longland all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Let's move on to the men's draw now, and let's talk about the top seed. Carlos Alcaraz narrowly avoided a five-setter today against your man, Nicholas Jarry. A lot of people recording review material for day six of Wimbledon won't have a Nicholas Jarry guy on their team when they need one. We, David, have a Nicholas Jarry guy.
Yeah, thank goodness.
He was a breakdown in the fourth, wasn't he, Carlos Alcaraz? This didn't feel like one of those top seeds facing a plucky underdog where it's a bit of fun, but the result's never in doubt. I thought there was serious jeopardy in this one, and Alcaraz did blooming well to wrestle it back and not only win it, but prevent a fifth set.
Completely agree, yeah. I mean, because Nicholas Jarry is good, as I've been saying.
Repeatedly. And yeah. All the time.
Yeah, and honestly, for us seasoned Nicholas Jarry watchers,
Are there others? Okay, sorry.
What I was very impressed with today was just how he stepped up, actually, in some pretty big moments. There was a bad miss in the fourth set to lose his serve. He missed a very easy forehand, which is something that Carlos Alcaraz mentioned in his on-court interview as a turning point. But in particular, in that second set, he had a break, he lost it, and then he still managed to win the set in the tiebreak, even though Carlos Alcaraz was Carlos Alcarazing and coming up with some showtime shots, you know?
There was a lob, wasn't there?
Oh, it was absolutely stunning. And yet, Jarry then won the tiebreak. You know, it was really, really impressive from him. But what I loved about this match is that Jarry forced Alcaraz to use his full repertoire of shots and his full range of his talent because he needed to. I mean, sometimes Alcaraz will just do it just for the sake of it, just because it's fun and he's having a good time. But actually, today, it was you know, incredible shots at important times, and he needed to come up with that tennis today, Alcaraz. And that's what I loved about this match. It felt like, yeah, it really did feel like Alcaraz was under pressure, under threat from Nicolas Jarry. Just, he has got such a big game. He's a huge man, 6 foot six. He's got a massive forehand, a really flat backhand. He likes coming forward. He's got a big serve under the roof. It was a nightmare, really, for Alcaraz. And I think he did really, really well to problem solve and come through it. And my man Jarry, you know, people are going to be on board now.
He's top 30 in the race, Jarry. I mean, he is a serious proposition, and it'll be a relief to players like Carlos Alcaraz that he's going to be seeded at Slams. But obviously, he's seeded at this Slam, but I think this was his first one being seeded, yeah. And he's going to be seeded going forwards.
I commentated on it, and I was impressed with him. But also, I think he just simplified his tactics. He said, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to hit. If the ball's there to be hit, I'm going for it. And you're going to have to deal with my size and presence of the net. And it was a considerable issue for Alcaraz at times during that match.
Alcaraz's biggest Wimbledon win in his incredibly long career so far.
Yeah, I mean, he had a good one last year in five sets against Struff. That was out on court one.
Almost similar.
Very similar, I think. Struff big guy coming out.
Agricultural.
But yeah, I would say that is fair. I think that is what Jarry brings to the table. I think he's a good player. I think he's got some quite good hands for somebody of his size. But his best wins on this surface or on hard courts are going to come, and even on clay courts, is if he plays big man tennis.
Well, similar things apply. We might be talking about a very similar match for Carlos Alcaraz in the next round, because he will face Matteo Berrettini. Of aforementioned Matteo Berrettini is back fame. David, you've just commentated on a straight sets win for Berrettini over Alexander Zverev. And again, we try not to have favourites, don't we? But goodness me, you've got to be hard of heart to not be chuffed to bits to see Matteo Berrettini doing this.
Well, I have downed my beer because I'm high on Matteo Berrettini. I swear to God. For a start, you know, you're right. 2 years ago, he reached the final. Last year, he comes in having won the Queen's title and the Stuttgart title, and he gets COVID, and he's just devastated. I remember us going to the US Open and asking him how long it took him to recover, and he said, I don't think I have recovered mentally.
And that was after having missed the whole clay court season,
yeah.
Wasn't it, with a hand or wrist injury?
He's had a terrible time this last 12 months, and I actually took the chance to look up during this match the video of him leaving the court in Stuttgart a few weeks ago. It's like a month ago, against Lorenzo Sonego. He's won three games in two sets as Berrettini, and he leaves the court sobbing. Doesn't play Queens, did he, in the end? And honestly, he's an also-ran coming into this tournament. I haven't even thought about him. It's kind of Rybakina times 10 in terms of how much I'm dismissing him based on all this. I think when he beat Dimonor in the previous round, that really caught my attention. You don't beat Dimonor without playing well. And today, Alexander Zverev put in, over the course of a three-set, three-hour match, he put in 81% of first serves in. Hit mostly at 130 miles an hour. He won 90% of those points, Zverev. Berrettini won in straight sets. First set was, I think, 6-3. There was a single breaker serve. The next two sets were tie breaks. I've never seen Berrettini play better than that. It was so uplifting. And I am telling you right now, if Berrettini plays Alcaraz in the form that they were in today, Berrettini will win in straight sets.
You can drop your mic, David.
Silence doesn't work on a podcast,
We don't
David.
Know what will happen in 2 days' time. Alcaraz may come out with the answers. Berrettini may not deliver that performance. But those respective performances, I watched them court level in commentary boxes, and I saw two players at a completely different level on this particular surface. Berrettini knows what he is on a grass court, and he was so free and excited by his own performance. Suddenly, out of nowhere, out of despair, he has found what he's been looking for, and it was joyous.
What I don't understand about the nature of that win for Matteo Berrettini, and maybe you can help me with this, is usually when you're finding your form after injury, what takes the longest to come back, what you can't cheat, is the match toughness, the match tightness. Okay, he's playing great tennis. He's found his best tennis out of nowhere. Brilliant. But a match like that where someone's serving bombs at you and it's all about taking the paltry chances that you do get, usually that's the fine-tuning that only comes with time.
Yeah.
How's he doing it?
I really don't understand it, Catherine. I didn't get a chance to hear his post-match press conference. I really would have been curious, and we'll go and check it out afterwards, because it's almost like he's just sort of discovered it in real time and he's surprised by it as well. But just like Zverev played really, really well. I don't think Zverev can play that much better on a grass court than that. There were some rallies where I'm thinking, I mean, Zverev threw in a few duffer drop shots when he really should have been going after his backhand. But one point, he hit the big backhand on the line, and Berrettini's got this diffusing forehand slice where he just cushions the pace of it, gets back in the rally, and then he was hitting his backhand and he was absolutely knifing the slice, and if the ball's there on the forehand, forget about it. It was awesome.
I'm high on David being high about Matteo Berrettini.
I swear I'm not usually that into Berrettini, right? I like him.
I'm not sure anyone is.
But to me, it's a meat and potatoes game. It's the epitome of agricultural. He's got a massive serve. He's got a massive forehand. He protects his backhand. He's got decent touch, right? But he wins his matches in the same way. He was awesome. I'm telling you. Brilliant.
He was asked on the court about the fact that he finally gets a day off now. He's one of those players that I think has played 5 days in a row. Not full matches, obviously, but Tsitsipas is another one of those. More on him and his schedule to come. And he said, 5 days in a row is nothing. I spent so many days in bed crying about not being able to play.
Well, great, isn't it, that he's
so
produced that, and the crowd love him. You know, I got the sense that he makes you feel things when he's on the court, and he made them feel a lot of stuff.
We've got an awful lot still to talk about, considering we've just absolutely peaked for the episode. Matt, we've lost Matt. Matt is too stunned to speak.
Genuinely stunned right now. Yeah.
Would you like to talk about Holger Rune and Alejandro Davidovich-Vikina?
Will
that get you out of your funk?
Was great.
What a day it's been.
This was exactly the match that you think it was. That it was always going to be. Was there ever a world in which this match didn't go to a fifth set tiebreak and Alejandro Davidovich-Vikina didn't serve an underarm serve at 8-all in that tiebreak and not win another point? Like, of course that's how it went.
Yeah. I thought Davidovich-Vikina had found the most extraordinary way to lose a tennis match at Wimbledon last year. Which was
then?
When he lost on match point via a point penalty for ball abuse. I mean, that is pretty spectacular.
I don't even remember.
Also in a fifth set.
Also in a fifth set. He ran that very, very close today. in how he lost this match, because absolutely, first four sets, you know, first five sets, you know, all of it really was thrilling. It was momentum was swinging back and forth, and finally we end up in this match tiebreak, and I cannot stress enough, Alejandro Davidovich-Fokina played probably the best point I've seen all tournament to go up 8-5. It was an incredible, like, there was a dead net cord from Holger Rune, which he managed somehow to get to. Holger Rune lobbed him, and he sort of did a reverse lob and put it on Rune's baseline and won the point to go 8-5 up. The place is going crazy. You know, it's brilliant from Davidovich-Fokina. He did not win another point in the match after that. And at 8-all, he did an underarm serve, which was terrible. And Holger Rune just sort of ambled up to it and hit it for a winner.
That is extraordinary.
And in his Spanish press conference afterwards, he explained himself, or tried to explain himself, by saying that just moments before, he thought, oh my God, I can't play this point. He said, I shat myself.
That translates swear words from Spanish press conferences is my favourite thing.
Me he cagado. I shat myself. Like, he just bailed out. He just did a stupid underarm serve. Yeah, it was one of the biggest brain farts in tennis history.
That's what normal people would do.
Totally. I mean, oh my God. I mean, if you had to explain Alejandro Davidovich-Fokina to someone, I would say, watch the last 5 or 6 points of that match, because it was electrifying. And then it was, what the hell are you doing? And that is his career.
Holger Rune was asked about it a lot in his press conference, and he obviously didn't want to rub salt in the Davidovich-Fokina wounds. And he was like, I was surprised.
and look, grateful.
The thing is, we quite like an underarm serve.
We do.
But this is absolutely setting it back. This is not good for the underarm serve.
Imagine if you give it an ace, wouldn't it?
The thing is, Rune said, I was so pleased because he was serving so well.
Yeah, exactly. He really was. He was serving so well.
So it's like, what are you doing?
It was so funny. Yeah, and then Rune was pressed further on it, and he said, well, I wouldn't have done it. So Rune threw to the fourth round, and by the way, this is back-to-back Grand Slams where he's won match tiebreaks. I know in Paris he failed to back up that match tiebreak that he won against Francisco Cerúndolo that we all watched. Be interesting to see if he can do it here. He will face either Grigor Dimitrov or Francis Tiafoe in round 4. As it stands overnight, Grigor Dimitrov is dreaming about his 2-sets-to-love lead over Francis Tiafoe. How's that going to go, David? Grigor Dimitrov, expert, the fact that he has to sleep on this.
That's a very good question. I don't know. I would have felt a lot more confident for him if they'd have not had to stop. And I think that Francis Tiafoe will reset and make something of that. But yeah, I would still expect Dimitrov to win. I think he's, although he does have scar tissue, serious scar tissue mentally against a lot of players in a lot of positions, I still think he's had enough good leads against very good players that he's seen out, and I would expect him to go and do it.
We did get the obligatory Griggles playing well.
Well, he is.
Message.
He's looking dangerous. He is.
My favourite part of the day.
You just never know.
We were waiting for it to come through, and then it dropped.
Yep.
We'll see if we get another one tomorrow, shall we? Because they will be back tomorrow. Someone else that will be back tomorrow, Stefanos Tsitsipas. Now, he should have earned himself a day off tomorrow, because they finally caught up with singles today, except for the rain then coming. They caught up and then they fell behind again because rain came.
We had one day of a nice, neat schedule.
Yeah. British weather. Tsitsipas gets his job done, straight sets, 3 tight sets against Lazo Jera, but but three sets, playing similarly, I think, to how it was against Andy Murray, commanding stuff. Didn't see loads of this, but serve was firing, forehand was firing, looked good. So he's thinking, day off tomorrow, brilliant. I've been here every day of my life for the past 10 days, brilliant. But he's in the doubles, isn't he, with Petros. And they started their match yesterday, and they were a set all in that match with the interesting pairing of Arthur Fils and Luca Van Asch, the two French exciting youngsters. They were scheduled to resume that match today, got rained off and cancelled. So first on the schedule tomorrow is the resumption of Petros and Stefanos Tsitsipas against Luca Van Asch and Arthur Fils. Seriously, though, is this going to potentially damage his singles?
I mean, logically, I would say yes. It doesn't seem very sensible to me. I guess we're only going to know when we see the results. It doesn't sound sensible to me. Because when you come in every day and you've got to get changed, you've got to get... And he's a pro, you know, he's really tries to do the right things. He always looks the part and all the rest of it. That is wearing, as far as I'm concerned. I think that there is a chance that he just takes a little edge off his singles performance with that. Maybe he'll go and win both titles and prove all of that wrong. But I think that top players do not do that. And actually, if
not with Petros Tsitsipas, so they don't.
David's predicted Alcaraz to lose in straight sets and Petros Tsitsipas to win Wimbledon.
I've said maybe. But, I mean, Jessica Pegula pulled out the doubles, I think, didn't she?
Out of the mixed.
Out of the mixed
doubles. And I'm afraid to say the collateral damage, if you get any tweaks or if you, or frankly, even if the schedule starts to get behind because of weather, people start ditching mixed doubles or doubles. It just does happen. It's sad in a way, but I do think he's taken a risk. At least that's what usually is the case.
He's got Christopher Eubanks in the fourth round, which I know sounds like a good draw and is a good draw on paper. Eubanks today, straight sets for him over Christopher O'Connell. Again, a good draw for a place in the second week of a slam to take on your fellow Christopher. But I think Eubanks is going to take some beating because he is serving out of a tree. And Tsitsipas is the weakest element of his game is the return game on grass. He's going to be... I think there's going to be tie breaks in that match. And Eubanks won in three tie breaks today. He's tight, the good kind of tight, in those kind of situations. And I expect Tsitsipas to win if he shows up. But he needs to show up for that match. It's not a gimme. So we'll see. We will see.
I mean, but he has been showing up in the singles. You know, he's played way better here than I thought he would. I suppose it's just a question of whether it all ends up taking its toll on him. And, you know, we were talking to Pam Shriver yesterday after the podcast, and, you know, I think we made the point on the podcast that the schedule was difficult for a lot of players in the past few days, and it is going to take its toll on someone. Tsitsipas has played a bit of singles every day from Tuesday onwards. He's playing a bit of doubles again tomorrow. But I don't know. It feels like Tsitsipas is playing really, really well. And I just think I would back his quality over Christopher Eubanks. But I agree. It's not an easier match as it may appear on paper, because Eubanks has been brilliant and is playing with a lot of confidence.
Now, on the subject of withdrawing from doubles, let's talk about Casper Ruud again.
Yeah,
hasn't he like left?
Well, I think he's going to now, because he's got what he came for, David, and that was a weekend concert at the London Stadium.
Well, they are good. Sorry.
Went to the gig last night. His stated goal for the week. Got scheduled first on.
Yep.
Today.
One in 45 minutes.
Yep. Great. Brilliant.
Yeah,
it is possible to go to weekend concerts and also be successful in Wimbledon doubles. Great. Then what?
Then pulled out of the doubles with a, quote, shoulder injury.
Get well soon, Casper.
Yeah. Get well soon, Casper.
He's got Borstad to prepare for.
Don't enter it. Don't play. I'm fine with that. Protect your mental health. You don't have the bandwidth for the grass. Fine. Don't play. Don't play and do this.
I suppose he might have a shoulder injury, but it's a
bit. He won
sus,
in 45 minutes, David.
Although he was playing Daniel Galan, who definitely didn't need doubles on his schedule. So.
Right.
I don't know what. That might have been the worst match of all time. Didn't see it. I might have to watch the replay.
Last bit of men's singles action to cover off from today. Daniil Medvedev through to the second week here for the second time. The last time was 2021. And he now faces Jiří Lehečka. That place in the quarters.
And that was a very dramatic match. Lehečka against Tommy Paul.
Yeah.
Went five sets. You know, was interrupted by the rain. And the fourth set tiebreak was so dramatic because kind of a theme of this tournament, actually. We talked about it yesterday with Andy Murray. We mentioned it again today with Bianca Andreescu. Kind of around a challenge as a sort of turning point. Lehečka had match point. Paul hit a shot onto the baseline and Lehečka hit it back and hit a great shot back. But sort of as he hit it, challenged, thinking that Paul's shot was out. Paul's shot was actually in, so Lehečka lost the point, lost his match point, ended up losing the set. And I'm thinking at this point, well, surely Tommy Paul is a favourite now. He's got the momentum, having won sets 3 and 4. How, if you're Jiří Lehečka, do you overcome what just happened on his match point? And he really, really did. He got back to playing the tennis he played in the first couple of sets in that fifth. And yeah, he's such a good ball striker. I mean, it really makes sense to me that he's now working with Thomas Burdick.
Yes.
Because their games feel really quite similar. And when it's on, it's very hard to stop, I think, especially on grass. And I do think that's another tricky match for Medvedev. It was a tricky one today. He came through it, but Lehečka's performed well in slams this year and is playing really, really well.
Yeah, yeah. Dropped a set today to Martin Fucsovics, didn't he? And he was forced to play well, I thought, Medvedev, and I think he'll be forced to play well again against Lehečka. I think he might have a closing bit of mental fragility, Lehečka. Don't know, but he's a heck of a brawl striker. Really is. Looking forward to that one. Went to Medvedev's press conference. Asked him about how he views his year, because he's won all of these titles.
I was playing a little game with myself, reading the transcripts, trying to pick out your question, and ooh, that was the one I thought.
Oh,
excellent.
Because it was
the best question.
I lobbed that up for you and you smashed it away. Thank you very much. Yeah, asked him how he views his year, because he's won more titles than ever before. He's, you know, it's on paper it's far better than last year, and in lots of ways better than any year he's had on tour. But he has not done well at slams at all. Really disappointing Australian Open, and lost in the first round of the French, didn't he? And I said, would you swap the titles for better slam results? And he said, I'd swap them for a slam title, but I wouldn't swap them for a slam final.
Oh, that's interesting.
He likes trophies, basically.
Yeah.
He said, when you win a title, you get a trophy, you can look at it, you can hold it. And he went, I don't hold them, generally. I don't sort of just sit at home hugging my trophies. I mean, it would be fine if he did, I think I probably would. But yeah, interesting insights into the mind of Daniil Medvedev are always interesting, I think, and I'm looking forward to Medvedev against Lehečka. What have we got on the agenda for tomorrow, shall I tell you?
Please.
We start on centre with Andre Rublev against Alexander Bublik. Bublik gracing centre court.
Looking forward to watching him.
It's a Haller final.
Oh yes.
Repeat.
Won by Bublik. Won.
Was that close, that final?
Yeah, I think, put me on the spot again, but I think all the sets were 6-3, if I remember correctly. But it was, you know, 2-1 to Bublik.
Świątek Bencic, second on.
Very looking forward to that.
Yeah. Eyes emoji.
Yeah, and Hercatch Djokovic.
less
looking. Slightly less eyes emoji.
Number one caught Pegula against Serenko. And then Yannick Sinner against Daniel Galan.
Of losing to Casper Ruud in 45 minutes fame.
Also being 6-love, 5-love up on Stefanos Tsitsipas at the US Open.
Yeah.
Last year.
On Serena Williams night. And it was suddenly like, what the hell is happening over there?
Such surreal associations with Daniel Galan.
I'd forgotten that.
Last up on court one tomorrow, Azarenka against Svitolina.
Big yes, please.
Yeah, really pumped for that. Court two is Vondroušová against Buzková, the Czech-off. Oh, that worked, didn't it? Yeah, very good. then it's the resumption of Grigor Dimitrov against Francis Tiafoe. And then Roman Sifuelin against Denis Shapovalov. Actually, one of the things that Medvedev was asked about in press today was Roman Sifuelin, because he's a contemporary of his. And Medvedev's glowing about his game.
Wasn't he... I'm getting into territory that I'm... This isn't terra firma.
We're live, Matt.
But,
we're live.
But I think he was the guy that posts Aslan Karatsev for the Russian ATP Cup team. It was like the next year, Roman Sifuelin was their guy.
Yes.
Who was like, oh, suddenly we've got
this guy. He first came to my attention at that ATP Cup, for sure. He's a former junior number
one.
Yeah,
he is, yeah.
That just hasn't quite transferred, but the game is there. Court three tomorrow starts with Petros and Stefanos Tsitsipas against Artur Fils and Luka Van Asch. They're tied at one set apiece. Match of the day, I reckon.
Is that like an 11 o'clock start?
Yes, it is.
Sounds like perfect preparation. For
then it's Potapova against Andreeva, the match that is carried over from today. Then we have some mixed doubles involving Bianca Andreescu. She's teamed up with Michael Venus again. Of course, they reached the French Open mixed doubles final. And then Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula are in women's doubles action last on. You've got Alex de Minaur and Katie Bolter playing mixed together tomorrow. Jamie Murray and Taylor Townsend, which is a really fun mixed partnership. Oh my goodness, I've just seen something extraordinary. Last on court 18 tomorrow is Marcel Granollers and Horacio Zaballos against the winner of Petros and Stefanos Tsitsipas against Artur Fils and Luka Van Asch. He might have to play twice, first and last, tomorrow.
I don't know what to say about that. I mean, what is he doing? Okay, good luck.
Good luck.
Wishing them luck.
There is juniors all over the place tomorrow. The wheelchair event gets started on Monday, I think. We'll look out for that. Christopher Eubanks is in the men's doubles. Didn't know that. Playing with Jay Wolf, who I assume is JJ Wolf.
Surely.
Would be weird if there was a Jay Wolf and a JJ Wolf, but we'll confirm on a future podcast. Maybe. Juniors everywhere tomorrow. I think that the wheelchair event doesn't get started till Monday, but I will confirm that for you. I think that's it for day six live from Wimbledon. We, of course, have our mascot Erin. Hello, Erin. Lovely, lovely Erin. Brought to our lives by Daryl, Dave's mate Daryl.
Yeah.
We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. Who knows if we got points today, Xenia, because rain. David's got Maisie.
I did get points today, Maisie, with your help, because we picked Matteo Berrettini.
Oh. That was why you were high on Matteo Berrettini.
It didn't hurt, let's just put it that way.
And Matt's got Darwin. It's all in the balance, Darwin.
Yeah, although not looking great, because Grigor Dimitrov's decided to show up.
No great surprise, you could have chatted with me.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. Interestingly, Ilana participated in the Mexican wave today during the rain delay, and Billie Jean did not. She was distracted, though.
I actually think I would have had it the other way around.
Me too. Me too.
Me too.
I was just sat there in the rain with nothing to look at, so I was...
You were on the world
observing team. These things. I was, yeah. Great I was moment. Texting Reggie. Caught on the world feed, texting Reggie, telling him he'd dress the same as Billie Jean King. We have our top folks, and he had.
He even put his glasses on, specially.
We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, Andrew. Hello to all of you, and thank you for your support. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
Yes, we have a special shout-out today, and that is for Clark. And this comes courtesy of Debbie Schmidt, who says, "My son Clark and I share a love of the tennis podcast, and today made it all the more special as Clark met David and later got engaged after the Alcaraz match. They'll be connected to tennis, Wimbledon, and the tennis podcast." So we wanted to give a special shout out and congratulations to Clark.
The romantic effect you have on people, David.
It was lovely. Yeah, when I walked in this morning, and I mean, you know, we are lucky enough to sometimes run into listeners, friends of the tennis podcast sometimes, but people that listen to us, and Clark was one of those. There were a couple of people when I walked in, and Clark was just so kind and generous about what we do, and he was with his friends and they were all videoing it, and I was all a bit weird, and there were other people like, "Oh, I wonder, he's it must be somebody famous," and they're like, "Don't recognize him at all." And Clark couldn't have been nicer and said, "You know, maybe have you, I don't think you've ever had a Clark as a shout out and I said, "I'm thinking I don't think we have. I'm actually struggling for a Clark as a tennis player, but you know, if you ever want to shout out, you can get one." So I'm still struggling for Clark
Graebner.
What?
Where was that? That was in my back of my head as well, yeah. But I don't know why. Who is that?
He was around the time of Arthur Ashe was around. Isn't that book Levels of the Game? I think that might be written about a Clark Graebner Arthur Ashe match at the US Open.
I'm going to go with that, Matt. I believe you knew. But I do want to say congratulations.
Someone will be correcting me in the comments if I'm wrong.
To Clark, I mean, you know, congratulations and to you both, and it was lovely to meet you.
Yeah, congratulations, Clark, to you and your fiance, and consider your marriage blessed by David Law and the Tennis Podcast. What could possibly go wrong?
You know, we got three beers here. We had four. I dropped one on the way up. So, don't know what that says.
Right, that's it, I think. It better be. Thank you all ever so much for listening, for watching.
I'm sorry, I've been left speechless so many times tonight.
You're a professional podcaster, Matt. Get your head in the game. It's all David's fault, isn't it? Congratulations, David, on winning the beer race. I didn't even complete the beer race tonight. Thank you all for joining us live, if that's what you're doing, for listening on the podcast, if that is what you're doing. You're all supporting the podcast, and that means the world to us. We're loving doing these live shows here from Wimbledon, from this incredible position. If you'd like to support the show year round, you can do that by becoming a friend of the Tennis Podcast and getting access to all of that boco. It's not happening,
it's,
is it?
It's never gonna work.
It's not happening. The kids are saying it. Anyway, you can subscribe to the newsletter, which is free and excellent. It's an absolute no-brainer. The link to do that is in the show notes. And that is where you find the 90s off between David and Matthew. Things are hotting up.
Which is getting tense.
Very fun development today in the 90s off, which you can read about in the newsletter.
Excellent.
How come I don't know about it?
You can. What else can you do? You can leave us an Apple Podcast review. You can hit the like and subscribe button if you are with us on YouTube. Apparently, the kids tell us that helps a lot.
Yeah, we don't really know why.
So please, if you're enjoying our stuff, then like and subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Leave us an Apple Podcast review if that is how you're listening. And tell your friends if you think they might like the Tennis Podcast. And if you are visiting Wimbledon and it's not too late for you to stay, then come and see us up here on the roof overlooking Court 18. We record every night at the end of singles play on the show courts. And we'll be back tomorrow doing just that. We can't wait to see you and speak to you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.
I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.